I know you want to sing, Rafer.
I don't
want to
sing.
You totally want to sing right now.
I don't like singing. I don't do it very well. I don't want to do it.
He dreamed a dream of singing songs.
I recorded a podcast this morning.
Ooh, Rafer. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Why don't you want to sing?
Broadway,
I don't understand.
Here I come.
They're so good. I don't
Where's
know.
Where's my agent?
Ugh. You should just sing all the time. You're so good. You're so good. And are you in a band?
No, I'm not in a band. I can't play an instrument.
Well, I know you used to be a rock critic.
I'm
a critic. A lot of people who are rock critics are in bands as well.
I can only judge other people. I can't do anything myself.
Oh, that's the story of my life too. I'm just going to judge quietly or loudly. I'll just judge and judge and judge. But
Kristen, why are we singing as if I didn't know?
I love that you were singing. We're singing because of Les Miserables.
Les Miserables, the big Christmas movie.
Yes, the movie based on the West End show that eventually came to Broadway that has launched a billion tears.
Boy, that's true.
People just love the Les Mis.
And don't forget about Victor Hugo's involvement in all this.
Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares.
Nobody does.
The book's like 1,200 pages. Nobody cares, but they love the musical.
They
love it. And now it's a movie. And now, on this fabulous Christmas movie day, it's out.
It's out.
It's out.
And we should say, because this might be the big movie for others, Django Unchained, the Quentin Tarantino spaghetti western tribute, shoot 'em up, whatever you want to call it.
They're very similar movies.
Yes, very similar. Well, this is good. This is good for Hollywood, right? You spread out the genres, and you know, when families go to the movies, they can either all go into one theater, they can buy their tickets separately, and
Everybody wins. Both movies
are about the same length.
Yeah, if you have 3 hours to kill, either one.
You can come out and meet back in the lobby.
Excellent. So, happy holidays. Let's do this movie date podcast for the special holiday 2012. First, introduce ourselves, though. I'm Kristen Meinzer, producer for The Takeaway.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, movie critic for Newsday, and this is Movie Date.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by. When hope was high, life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die.
All righty, Rafer. It's a very exciting holiday movie day.
Very exciting. Les Mis and Django.
Yep. And I'm super excited. But first, let's get to trivia.
Yes.
So last week we asked, in honor of This Is 40, we asked which cast member of This Is 40 was, before making it into the big time, a DJ at bar mitzvahs. And here is the right answer.
Hello, this is Marjorie calling, and I know the answer to your trivia question. The answer to who did the bar mitzvah videos is Paul Rudd, right? That's his name, Paul Rudd.
That is right. Great job.
Excellent, excellent. All right. So let's do today's trivia in honor of Les Mis. Which 80s teen pop princess saw her dream come true when she was cast as Eponine on Broadway? If you know the answer, 5717 movies. Give us a call.
Yay! That's going to be. Oh, I was about to make a joke here, but then it might reveal the answer. I'm not going to say it.
Okay, don't do it. Don't do it. Yep. Don't spoil it.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to spoil it. But I am ready to talk about Django.
What's your name, boy?
His name is Django Freeman.
Why'd you dig him up?
Well, a fortuitous turn of events brought Django and myself together.
This is Quentin Tarantino's spaghetti western, inspired by an old 1960s spaghetti western called Django.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Jamie Foxx as a former slave, now turned bounty hunter, being mentored by Dr. King Schultz, I think his name is.
Yes.
German-born bounty hunter, played by the inimitable Christoph Waltz. Star-studded cast. Aside from those two, you've got Leonardo DiCaprio as Monsieur Candy, the plantation owner of a plantation called Candyland. Mm-hmm. Who else do we have in this? Oh, just Don Johnson and...
Oh, Don Johnson's fantastic.
Jonah Hill. Yes. And, you could really... It's a long list. Now, Kristen, were you at all looking forward to this movie? Were you excited about this? Because I was. I've been very excited about this.
I was super excited about it. You're the one who told me about this movie. I was really excited about it. I love the premise of it. You have a former slave becoming a bounty hunter. I love the idea, just the clips I saw, but I love the idea of Leo DiCaprio playing this ridiculous over-the-top slave owner, yes. this plantation man. And I just, yeah, I thought that there was a lot of fun to be had with this movie. I also really like Kerry Washington.
Oh, yes, we forgot about
Kerry
Washington.
And Kerry Washington plays Django's wife, who's still a slave.
Right.
And so there was a lot that I was going to hopefully like about this movie, or so I thought.
Oh, but, I hear a but coming.
But here's my big but.
Yeah.
Sometimes Tarantino is just a little bit out of control.
Yes.
Sometimes I feel he has too much control and he just needs an editor. He needs people to step in and say, all right, Quentin, that's enough.
Yeah.
That's totally enough. And no one was doing that with this movie. I don't know. Should I play my cards? Should I play them all?
I say go ahead. Well, you know what? Tell me some things you liked about it. What are the things about it that you liked?
You know who I really, really loved was Dr.
Schultz?
Dr. Schultz.
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, Christoph Waltz. Christoph Waltz, every time he was on screen,
He's marvelous.
It was just magic.
Right.
Christoph Waltz was, I actually, it's a shame because I really wanted to be just as invested in Django, but... and Django's good, and he's the main character.
Sure.
And he's fine, but he's not mesmerizing in the same way. He's just not. And
so, Christoph Waltz, as we all know, stole the show in Inglourious Basterds, walked away with an Oscar, and is back playing somewhat. I mean, in that film, he played a villain. In this film, he's playing a good guy, somewhat the same character. German, very friendly, cheerful, you know, very, always happy to see you, you know, even when he's shooting you in the head. And he, you know, he takes Django under his wing, and he's an interesting character because he's a white European living in America, doesn't like slavery, but decides that, as he says to Django, in this case, it kind of works in his favor. If he could keep Django on as a slave for a little while and force Django to help him out with some bounty hunting, then he'll strike a bargain with Django and let him go at the end, and he can be a free man. So I like that setup. It's a really brilliant premise on Tarantino's part. He wrote it, as he always does, of course. I like that. I liked Christoph Waltz as well. And Django, I liked too. Not quite as interested in him as in
his
everyone
character's
else.
Not as interesting. Yeah, there's just not as much given to him to be interesting.
Yeah.
He just wants his wife back.
Right.
That's all he wants. And after a while, it's like, yeah, we get it. You want your wife back.
Right.
And that's good. That's a good husband who wants his wife back. But
right.
He just doesn't have the intricacies and the charms. And, you know, Christoph Waltz is so charming and funny. And he's so righteous. And he's so good. And...
And everybody else in this movie is so over the top. Don Johnson plays, I can't remember the name of him, his character's name, but he plays a southern plantation owner. It's a small part, but he, you know, shows up looking essentially like a thinner Colonel Sanders with the little, you know, pointy beard and the mustache and his little, you know, bolo tie. And that, you know, and that part's very funny. He's very, he's got a lot of energy and he's really playing it up. Leonardo DiCaprio really, you know, kind of
fantastic.
Goes for broke.
So over the top enjoyable.
Right.
He's
screaming,
good.
Yelling, red faced, you know, sort of twirling his mustache, the whole bit. A good villain. But yeah, the Django character somehow kind of fades into the background a little bit. And I think, as you were saying, this movie is 2 hours and 50 minutes long.
It's too freaking long.
I really had a great time with it and was really enjoying it for the first hour and maybe hour and 15 minutes or so, and there comes a point, I don't want to spoil anything, there comes essentially a climax arrives where the film quite literally could have ended.
And should have ended.
And
I know
keeps,
exactly what you're talking
right.
about. It's like, why is this still going on after this?
But it doesn't just go into Act 4, it goes into Act 5, and then Act 6, and I think an Act 7. And I think, and I have to say, as much fun as I had with it, there came a point where I was really checking my watch and just thinking, I would like this to be over now and go home because this is taking way too long and I'm getting bored.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want out of a Tarantino film.
No, I was getting bored. I wanted it to end at the point you're talking about.
Yes.
Not going to spoil it for
right.
the listeners. But
right.
I also, on top of that, my other criticism is I just think Tarantino got too out of control with the violence in this one.
The
violence was to the point where it wasn't shocking and comical anymore. It was just like, Are you freaking kidding me? How much longer is this violent scene going to go on? Because the violent scenes would sometimes last so long.
Well, and he has to do this sort of ridiculous thing with every gunshot where it looks as if you're firing into like a half-gallon quart of fruit punch, right? So all this red stuff just sort of goes blurp up in the air. Nothing ever actually looks like a real gunshot. It just looks like an overfilled squib being popped out. So, and it's funny and it's fun, but, you know, 2 hours and 50 minutes, man, it really wears you down after a while. So I have not actually written my review of this yet, but I don't know.
It's a bad date. Admit it. It's a bad date.
I can't really, because it's so much fun at the start, but I don't know.
A lot of things are fun at the start, you know? The date starts off well. By the end, everything's kind of awkward. I accidentally went home with you and I shouldn't have. That's kind of how I felt by the end of this, where it's like everything started off so well. And then by the end of the date, I'm just like sneaking out of your apartment in the middle of the night. And I'm just like,
how did I get myself into this?
How am I in this situation? I really thought I was in love with you for 10 minutes there. Yeah. And now it's 3.5 hours later. I'm not in love with you, actually.
I
just feel embarrassed for
at
everybody.
At least an okay date for me.
No, I already described what kind of date it is for me.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Okay, Kristen.
All right. Let's move on to Les Miserables.
Who am I? Can I condemn this man to slavery? Pretend I do not feel his agony. This innocent who bears my face, who goes to judgment in my place. Who am I?
All right, Les Mis.
You've been excited about this one. This is right in your wheelhouse, Kristen.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen Les Mis on Broadway. I've seen it twice in Minneapolis. I saw it on the West End in London.
Oh, wow.
I was a major Les Mis freak, like any good, really, really tragic teenage girl would be, because it has so much tragedy in it.
Yes.
And there's so much to cry about. And should we give people a plot summary? I don't know if we showed or if everyone knows the plot.
It is one of those things where you feel like everyone kind of – it's almost like The Hobbit. I kept thinking to myself, do I have to spell out the plot of The Hobbit? But do you want to give, since you're so familiar with it?
Sure. We have Jean Valjean. Back when he was a teenager, he stole a loaf of bread to feed his sister and nieces and nephews. He ends up in jail for 19 years.
Under the lash.
Of Javert, who loves justice. Javert only lives for justice.
Right.
If you're a criminal, you're always a criminal. And Javert lets Jean Valjean know early on in the movie, you know what? Your 19 years are up. You're on parole now, but I'm always going to be watching you. I'm always going to be watching you, and you better show your yellow papers everywhere you go.
That's right.
And Jean Valjean decides early on, I'm just going to rip up these yellow papers.
I'm out of here.
So Javert is stalking him through the whole movie. And then Jean Valjean creates a whole new life for himself. He becomes a mayor, a factory owner. Along the way, one of his factory workers, Fantine, played by Anne Hathaway, has a very tough go of it, partly indirectly because of Jean Valjean not noticing something that he should have noticed and helped her with. And he ends up, oh, God, how much more should I tell?
Well, he ends up with her daughter, Cosette,
yes,
taking care of her. And then, of course, history overtakes them, and the revolution begins fomenting. And they're both, for different reasons, kind of drawn into the melee. She sees a boy that strikes her fancy, and he decides that he has to he takes an interest in the boy himself. Is that right? Does that sound like about correct?
Yeah, like by taking an interest, mostly just because he wants his daughter to be happy.
Yeah, he believes in their love.
Yes, and meanwhile, Eponine's just like, "Hello, somebody give me a boyfriend. I want a boyfriend."
You really do. You really do identify with that character, don't you, Kristen?
That's me.
That's Eponine, so cute.
C'est moi. Yes.
Oh. All right. Well, so your hopes were high. You expected big things out of this movie. We should say, star-packed cast: Hugh Jackman as Jean Valjean, Russell Crowe as Inspector Javert, Amanda Seyfried as Cosette, the daughter,
mm-hmm.
Eddie Redmayne as the boy that she loves. Eddie Redmayne, not that familiar to people, but he was in My Week with Marilyn.
Yes, that's right.
So that's, if you've seen that, you'll recognize him.
We have Helena Bonham Carter
and Sacha Baron Cohen
as the kind of comical innkeepers who lighten it up every once in a while so that you don't kill yourself while you're watching the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And as you said, Anne Hathaway as Fantine.
Yeah. And the whole thing is sung through. There's very little that's not sung in the movie.
Yeah,
it's like a real opera. And
yes.
then all of the cast members did their own singing mm-hmm. in the movie.
Yes.
And so, Rafer?
Well, you talked about the singing, and you mentioned that everyone does their own singing, and I would say you can tell. I think, and the people that are good are the ones that you would expect to be good. Someone like Hugh Jackman, who has Broadway bona fides, sounds terrific. His voice is great. He gets a string of really intense opening numbers in the first maybe 15, 20 minutes of the film. And they're long takes. They're one take, close up. So you really see him go through this range of emotions. He's fantastic. Amanda Seyfried, I thought, was really good. And Eddie Redmayne, I thought, had a really good voice. And I think Eddie Redmayne also has some treading the boards in his background. Mm-hmm. Anne Hathaway. That's what they call it. Treading the boards,
are
right?
Are you sure you're not Broadway?
I'm not.
You're a little bit Broadway.
I'm not Broadway.
Broadway baby.
So I thought they were all really good. And Anne Hathaway, I thought, was quite good. I'm going to say the weakest link and the link that really, whenever he was on screen, really marred the film for me was Russell Crowe.
Oh.
I thought his voice was so weak in comparison to everyone else's. And he's playing an incredibly strong, dominant sort of force of nature. But his voice is too breathy. And this is a guy who has his own rock band, by the way, right? 30-odd foot of grunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he can't carry this stuff off. And his voice kind of... it's got too much air in it, not enough lung power, and it I feel like his voice never works in the film for me, and it really drew me out of the film a lot.
Well, I actually thought a lot of them had mediocre voices.
Oh, really? Who else did you care for?
I mean, I would say Anne Hathaway. What something I found really outstanding about most of the actors, like Anne Hathaway, even if their singing's not good, their acting is good, so
yes,
their delivery
she's good.
Is good.
Yes.
And so Anne Hathaway, I thought her singing was really so-so, but... her delivery, how she acts through the song, is so outstanding that it was just, yeah.
It's pretty much a couple gallons of tears she's shedding throughout this very brief role, actually.
Yeah. And that makes up for it for me. So a lot of the actors, that's how I felt. I'm like, would I just listen to them sing? No, but I would listen to them while I'm watching them act because together, the acting and the singing together worked for me.
So, okay, so kind of mixed reviews on the acting / singing. And I will say something else, that the directing, this is directed by Tom Hooper of The King's Speech, mm-hmm. An Oscar winner. I found this movie to be not very well directed. And
What do you mean?
Well, okay, so the beginning... he really goes all in. Like he lays all his chips on the actors, right? Every time someone is singing, he goes right in for a close up and stays right there on their face.
Here's a close up of me crying.
Yeah, right.
Here's a close up of me crying for 5 minutes while I sing.
Right, right. And as I say at the beginning, when Hugh Jackman is going through this series of, I don't know what you, not monologues, but sung monologues, he looks so great. He's looking right into the camera. You are right in his face. He's got you by the lapel, singing right at you, and it feels great. And then you begin to realize slowly, that everybody is going to do that. Every single musical number is going to come down to a close-up on the person's face, and we're talking about a lot of musical numbers, like 20 musical numbers, and what happens is... the scenery goes away. The context goes away. There's no spectacle in this movie. You open up with that big set of the ship, you know, mm-hmm. with all the prisoners under the lash, you know, rowing, pulling things. It's this, and there's a little choreography there. And that's really the last time, that opening shot is the last time we see anything you would call kind of a staged musical style spectacle. And the rest of it is all close-ups on people's faces. And that's kind of, by the end of the film, it's like, you haven't really been in 1800s France. You've just been sort of focused on all these people's faces. You don't get that sense of a place and a you don't. I use the word over and over, but you don't get a sense of spectacle that the film set you up for at the beginning.
I didn't have an issue with the lack of spectacle. Actually, I thought I mean, if you've seen the stage play, there's spectacle on a small scale on mm-hmm. on the stage, but it's really about character. And I think they mm-hmm. did mostly a good job with character in this.
Okay.
Something that I wish that the movie would have fixed, because you can take liberties with the movie. They did add, I think, one song in it. And I think they did, because I don't remember it from the show, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I think they could have built up some things better and decreased other things. Because For example, the romance between Cosette and Marius is so flimsy and stupid.
It's very Shakespeare.
It's just awful. And I always hoped that if this was made into a movie that they would do a better job of enriching that and adding more to it so it doesn't feel so flimsy compared to everything else, which is so weighty in this. And I kind of wish they would have done that. I wish that the rest of the story was tightened up more for those people who are not familiar with Les Mis. I think it's probably going to be hard to follow in some cases.
It didn't strike me as hard. I have not seen the play.
Okay.
It didn't strike me as hard to follow. But it seemed very much, and I should say, I have not read the novel. I actually started it a while back and got about, 40 pages into it. And that's where I stand
only
today.
Only 1,160 to go.
Yeah, exactly. But I just wanted to get a sense of the writing and the style. So I really am not familiar with the plot at all. But I didn't find it hard to follow, but it did seem very soap opera-ish in the way that novels of that period are, and somewhat, a lot of contrivances, coincidences, implausibilities, things like that, which I'm willing to forgive. But I didn't find it necessarily confusing. My one question, maybe I'm missing something. I don't really understand why everyone the idea of the French Revolution seems kind of tangential to me in this movie. I don't really get thematically.
Why can't the characters just have character lives, and why does there have to be this whole revolution happening?
I don't really get a sense of why these people get involved in the French Revolution, other than that they're our heroes, and we all know the French Revolution was a good thing.
So we
like imagining them being part of a good thing.
Victor Hugo likes the proletariat rising up.
Yeah.
That's all it is, I think.
And Jean Valjean is a criminal, and so he does have that kind of downtrodden background. But it didn't.
It didn't need to be there. You know what? I actually agree with you on that.
It didn't come through as
I
a,
actually
as any, you know
I agree
mean?
With you on that. It didn't. Yeah. They could have taken that out of the movie, but I wouldn't.
Right. But then you couldn't call it Les Miserables. You'd have to call it something else.
Oh, God. Crying people.
It would just be called crying.
So the movie.
It sounds to me like maybe we liked this film kind of okay, but we're not bowled over.
I cried like a little baby.
I cried
so much. The next morning I woke up and my eyes were swollen shut because I had cried so much during it. It's not a perfect movie, but I still got a lot of emotional oomph out of it.
So I still did. On the date scale, where do you fall on this one?
Oh, we talked in another podcast recently about how if a girl's crying and then you just end up sleeping with her.
Yeah.
It's like, it comes right out of the handbook of like, top 10 situations where you accidentally end up sleeping with people on purpose.
Oh, okay.
It's like, oh no, she's crying. Let me comfort you. And scene. Yes. That's what kind of date this is.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question.
That does answer my question vividly.
All right.
I would say this is I'd say this is a fine date. I think this is a solid film. Fine acting, fine singing, enjoyable. The musical numbers, I think, are all done justice. Ultimately, I was not overwhelmed. And as a movie musical, I found it a little lacking. So I would say it was kind of an okay date.
Okay. Not a great date.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you want to sing on the way home.
It does not. Don't try. Aww. Don't.
I'm going to make you sing again.
Kristen, don't try it.
I dreamed a dream. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's do this trivia question. Let's remind everybody of the trivia question. In honor of Les Mis, which 80s teen pop princess saw her Broadway dreams come true when she was cast as Eponine? If you know the answer, call us at 5717-MOVIES. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
On my own, pretending he's beside me. All alone, I walk with him till morning. Without him, I feel his arms around me. And when I lose my way, I close my eyes. And he has found me in the rain. The pavement shines like silver. All the lights are misty in the rain. river. In the darkness, the trees are full of starlight, and all I see is him and me forever.